As Taoiseach, I want to see everyone reach their full potential. I want to help create an Ireland that drives innovation and creativity, an Ireland that is compassionate, tolerant and respectful.
On the things that really matter to workers and families, you have comprehensively failed, and no amount of bragging or bluster will disguise that fact.
And we're live. Hello and welcome to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from Leinster House. Counting continuing as we speak in Midlands Northwest and Ireland South. With me, Paul Cunningham, Mary Regan and Tommy Mescal. I was going to call this the aftermath podcast, Mary, but we're still in the throes of it, or the bitter final stages. So talk us through where we're at as we speak.
Yeah, and some way to go yet, it would appear. So Ireland South has just completed its 18th count and Billy Kelleher has finally been elected. Where are we now? 4 or 5 days on. That's how long it's taken. So they'd be distributing his surpluses, and also John Mullins of Fine Gael, they will be distributing his surpluses. So really, Sean Kelly was elected the first count, Billy Kelleher now elected, Michael McNamara, the independent, in third place. And it really looks like a very tight race there between Mick Wallace and Cynthia Anywhere, who the Fianna Fáil candidate. So it would all appear to be coming down now to Grace O'Sullivan, the Green Party's surpluses. Where exactly might they go? And, you know, at this stage, you'd have to perhaps think that they might favour Cynthia Anywhere, who would have thought Fianna Fáil sneaking in a second seat there in Ireland South. And then the Midlands Northwest seems to be sort of going on for way longer than anyone had anticipated. They have a bit of a deadline there in the sense that Jarlath Regan, the comedian, is booked into the same venue tomorrow night. But they won't be held. They won't be held to any comedian. And few people are laughing there, as things are between the count and how long it's going on for. And I think we really need to spare a thought for those people involved in that count, because looking at the images, it looks like such a laborious, arduous task going on there. So as things stand in Midlands Northwest, we are now on the, sorry, I'm just looking through here, the 18th count there as well. So I'd say it looks like Luke Ming Flanagan isn't too far off. He's the poll topper. He should be elected, I'd say, fairly soon. He's on 110,000 votes at this stage. Then Nina Carberry, Fine Gael, Barry Cowan and Marie Walsh all look safe enough at this stage. So Pather Tobin's surpluses are being distributed. Will they favour independent Ireland candidate Kieran Mullooly? Or could they go Sinn Féin's way with Michelle Gildernew? She's now around 1,600 votes ahead of Kieran Mullooly. If you look at the ANC transfer patterns so far, you would think, given Pather Tobin is sort of gene pool Sinn Féin, that they'd go Sinn Féin's direction, but that actually hasn't been happening at all. Aintu's transfers have been going more to Fianna Fáil, actually, than Sinn Féin, and they've also been largely around a third of them going to independents.
Yeah.
So if that pattern holds true here, then Kieran Mullooly will be going to Brussels by the looks of things.
So as of this hour of a Thursday afternoon, it looks like Pather Tobin will decide whether Michelle Gildernew or Kieran Mullooly get the seat in North West, and Grace O'Sullivan likely to decide whether Cynthia Anywhere, who gets that second seat for Fianna Fáil, or Mick Wallace manages to hold onto it. That's kind of where we're at.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I think one of the things that's characterised this particular election campaign on you is the madness within the transfers. They have been going hither and thither. You can't necessarily guarantee, as Mary has just been elucidating there, where they're going to go. And that was the same as it was in Dublin and yeah, appears to be in the others. So I think Mary's right. I think that things, Lady Luck is leaning towards Cynthia Niverhu over Mick Wallace, but you wouldn't put anyone's money on it.
And it just goes to show every vote counts.
Every vote counts, yeah, absolutely.
Every preference counts.
Every preference counts, actually, yeah, and they can make dramatic differences as the votes are counted and totted up.
And we saw that in some of the local results, didn't we, as well? Votes being decided on a margin of 1 or 2 after recounts.
Yeah, and I think, actually, there is some talk of whether this is the appropriate course of action at all, having these big, long counts when many MEPs are already over in Brussels looking for their stake on committee places and what have you. But
and that's an important
I
point,
think,
like that Barry Andrews and Regina Doherty, after being elected in Dublin the following morning, were on a plane in Brussels, yeah, going into their grouping and saying, I want to be on the Econ Committee, or I want to be on the Foreign Affairs Committee. And if you're jolly come lately, by several days, all of the good jobs are gone. And you're having to pick out of the rest of the best.
Billy Kelleher pointed that out when he was on The Week in Politics with us. Again, because of that long count in South the last time, by the time he got out there, you'd an awful lot of catching up to do to try and get, you know, anything to do with the briefs that you were particularly interested in.
But like Luke McFlanagan is making a point that people are watching this. It's democracy in action. It's sort of sucking people into the process. It's engaging people. Maybe I'm biased, but I find it fairly fascinating to watch. And in that sense, he says, you know, they're in Brussels for 5 years. Maybe this is just a way to really get to know the candidates before they head off. People are watching them closely. But the transfers have been absolutely fascinating. Like in Dublin, there were more than 2,000 people who voted Claire Daly, followed by Regina Doherty. Now, who would put number one Claire Daly and number two Regina Doherty? Well, more than 2,000 people in Dublin did that. You cannot think of more polar opposites politicians in terms of their views and their, you know, their political
Women
ideology.
In politics, maybe.
Well, that might be the only link there. And as we were seeing in the locals and reference has been made to Holly Kearns, the fact in 2019, and we're going a little bit back, she was one vote behind on the eighth count for the local council election. She called a recount and she got by one vote. So Holly Kearns got in by one transfer. Within a year, she was the TD. Then she was the leader of a political party, the youngest party leader. So, I mean, that's how fickle these things are and how one vote can change the course of
a person's life.
But it's also it shows, I mean, it's an increasing volatility clearly in the electorate. Everyone's been talking about this all week. But it also means that life is harder, isn't it, for pollsters and pundits. You can't presume that much about the electorate. And we had Paul Murphy from People Before Profit, didn't we, Tommy, warning the government not to get too cock-a-hoop about these results. Pride comes before a fall.
Well, he said when you look at the two main parties in local government, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, that actually their first preference vote is the lowest that it's ever been in the history of the state. He said that in the Dáil during the week. So he was kind of pushing back against the narrative of the two parties that this has been a success for them. But also you have had the likes of Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, also saying that local elections are different to general elections, and also hitting out at the polls, saying that the polls indicated that perhaps Fianna Fáil was in for a bit of a walloping here. I think people would also point out, however, that these polls are probably more designed towards a general election rather than a local election.
Even I think Richard Colwell was saying that they'll have to rethink when it comes to polling in relation to Red Sea, because it does not seem to apply. They're not able to get the accuracy levels right when it comes to that. So I think even the pollsters themselves are seeing the gaps.
Well, I think the biggest phenomenon in Irish politics now is the last minute voter. And the last general election, I think about half of the electorate, according to exit polls, made up their mind in the last four or five days of campaigning. So people are clearly just leaving it to the last minute. And that's why campaigns matter more than ever before. And things can change a lot during the course of the campaign. But for all things have changed since the last electoral outing, the last general election and the last local election in 2019. And, you know, we've had the global pandemic, we've had so much global upheaval. And yet Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are more or less where they were in the low 20s back in those elections 4 and 5 years ago. So you'd wonder if they've settled into that sort of, is their place now in Irish politics somewhere in the low 20s, and the rest then is just a big floating vote which went to Sinn Féin, now appears to have found home with the independents.
And in terms of turnout, Sinn Féin saying, you know, the difference between the locals and the generals, you know, just shy of 50% for the locals this time, Sinn Féin saying it would be higher in a general and our voters stayed at home. Do you think it was more than that?
I don't know. I mean, I think if you're just looking at turnout, you know, when it comes to European elections, the turnout's been falling. This was only marginally smaller than last time in 2019. But nonetheless, the number of people are turning up. The general election, I think, in 2020 was, I think, 62 or 63%. So we know that there is a big difference. When it comes to Sinn Féin, the politicians I'm talking to are still scratching their own heads as to what are the reasons. Is it that the front bench wasn't leading the line? Was it the question of policy changes? They
the
don't
trend
know
was
themselves.
There in the polls, but nobody was predicting the collapse on the polls of their positioning.
Nobody. And yet at the same time, and David Cullinan, the Waterford Sinn Féin TD, and also the spokesperson on health, he was saying, we'll be ready for the general election. And I think it's quite possible and plausible that even if you did have a general election quite soon, that Sinn Féin's vote would be up substantially.
I thought Terry Prone made an interesting point, Mary, when she was talking at the weekend, and she was saying clearly we've had this pattern with Sinn Féin, and again they had the highest social media spend of all the parties, and that's a consistent thing with Sinn Féin and, you know, their outreach in particular to young people. But in recent months we've had this pattern of they come into the Dáil, leaders' questions or key debates, the clips go up online and they get a huge following. Terry Prone was saying don't equate that with support. Don't equate that with knocking on doors.
And if you look back to the last local elections, 2019, Fianna Fáil in opposition, granted that they were the competence and supply, and even, sorry, going back to the last local election before that, when Fianna Fáil were in opposition, they were landing punches on Fine Gael. They had, you know, the issue of the withdrawal of discretionary medical cards. That was a huge controversy. And Sinn Féin haven't really been sort of picking holes in what the government has been doing. Their big focus is on housing, but little else really. So there is a greater expectation, I think, in some ways now for the opposition to hold the government to account. Because if you look, you know, back to the competence and supply, Fianna Fáil in the general election did get punished for the competence and supply. They were in opposition at the time. And now a big question they're asking in Sinn Féin and is how are we getting blamed for what the government is doing, because maybe there's a greater expectation amongst electorate to hold the government more to account. So it's very hard to see how they're going to rebuild, where they're going to rebuild. You know, between the local and generals last time, there was that budget.
Well, they can just hope, I suppose, for another very volatile swing so that the tide would be running in their direction next time. But again, even with the volatility, they are the party that, you know, kept saying we are different to other political parties. We are part of our community. We have this machine in the community. We have this machine on the ground. We have our finger on the pulse. So if they have their finger on the pulse, how come they didn't see this coming? And how come everyone's now saying there have been missteps going on for months?
Well, one of the things they did was they brought out a poster 1 week out, and it was a picture of Mary Lou McDonald, and it just had the word change. And change often is a very powerful political message. You've seen those ones. They've been in office too long. We need to turf them out and get someone else in. And yet it didn't feel like Sinn Féin was in top gear on this. We didn't see Mary Lou McDonald leading the front. She's a really good political operator. She's a very good canvasser and campaigner. But it wasn't just her. Across the board, we didn't really see the front bench out there. So I don't know what the calculus was. But whatever they were doing, they weren't hitting the mark. And David Cullinan said, when he was asked about his local election campaign, he said they'd been working on it for a year. And he said that in case of Waterford, they did improve and they did add on. So is it a case of just being patchy in different constituencies? Or maybe it's just a case that they're all thinking about the general election, weren't too bothered about this anyway.
And I don't think change is as potent a political message as it once was 5 or 10 years ago. You know, it used to be the political message being used going back to Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Change had this real strength as a political message, but perhaps in a time of a lot of upheaval, when people are uncertain about what's going on in the world, maybe change isn't as powerful as perhaps it once was.
And maybe also because, you know, housing is the key issue. It came up on the doorsteps, even though it wasn't, you know, hugely a competence to do with the European campaign. But maybe people are also, while, you know, they may be incredibly frustrated with the housing situation, maybe they don't think anyone's got a particular magic wand to offer on it politically.
That could potentially be it, yeah. And I suppose the government can point to different figures which do show an improvement in different areas in terms of housing. I mean, the bottom line is many people still find it very difficult to rent or buy in this country. You'd wonder too, is Sinn Féin falling into the trap again? And they admitted themselves after 2019, when they did regroup and reflect after that local election, that they found that they had been seen as a party that was too negative, too shouty, that was pointing out flaws and not offering up solutions. And is it potentially falling into that trap again in the eyes of the public? Maybe, maybe not. I'm sure the likes of Ona Brin, our housing spokesperson, would strongly disagree with that. But you'd wonder, is that how it's being seen, where the voter thinks maybe stick with what we know rather than what we don't know?
He's a good example. Do you remember, like, after the last local election 2019, the next thing that happened was the by-election for Mark Ward in Dublin Midwest. And it was a success. Mark Ward won the election and then defended the seat in the general election shortly after that. And I remember speaking to Owen O'Brien, the Sinn Féin housing spokesperson. I mean, how did they master it? And he said it was really basic. They went back after the local elections. They looked at who had voted, who hadn't voted. They then mounted a campaign within the housing estates and they knocked on doors and said, this is important. We need you to come back out. So it was no science required. It was straight back to knocking on doors and being passionate about what you believe in.
And that could be a factor, given this 12% of the electorate voted in the general election but didn't come out to vote in these local elections. That's 12%. That's a big chunk of the electorate who didn't show up last weekend. And who are they? Are they people who are dissatisfied, don't have houses? Are they people who, you know, would be more motivated to vote if there was a general election held?
And the other thing that's been very curious throughout the past week is transfer patterns. You have, for instance, the Social Democrat. Obviously, we had the transfer patterns between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And it'll be really interesting to see, does that benefit them again in the general election? But also, you know, you look at the vote that's there between the Greens, the Social Democrats and Labour. Labour and the Social Democrats pretty happy with their outings this week. The Greens looking like they'd be more disappointed, although maybe not the wipeout they had expected. Together, they could, you know, they could add up to as much as support as Sinn Féin.
Yeah, they could. I mean, it was interesting to see when it came to... I've got to stop saying it's interesting. I was listening back to the podcast. That's my default.
Everything you say is so interesting. It is. We couldn't agree with you.
I know it's not, Mary. But it was interesting to see that when Kieran Cuff was knocked out, a whole block of his vote went straight over to Labour, Éanna Reardon, put him over the line, and the independent Niall Boylan was beaten. So it's there. But what we've known when we discussed this in relation to, say, something like the Social Democrats and Labour... You run into what seems to be more personality differences rather than policy differences, and they haven't been able to square
seats the circle. Seats are seats and votes are votes. You know, you don't have to love each other. It's just a voting pact. But it seems to be, you know, it's a bit odd, isn't it, that they could all be getting a bit more bang for the buck if they worked out some transfer pact.
Well, you did see Paul Murphy this week of People Before Profit calling for that type of pact and left-wing coalition, although he did exclude Labour.
This is a decadent. I thought it was also interesting. I'm not sure that while PBP might be calling for that, People Before Profit, I'm not sure that Mick Barry and Solidarity is the same view, because he would usually take a more conservative view in relation to the defining of Sinn Féin as a left-wing party.
So the other big winners, of course, from the past week, independents, again, increasing their representation at local and at European level and proving that they, whatever happens next in Irish politics, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, particularly those coming, if you like, on the right side.
Yeah, I mean, Micheál Lehan was reporting, and he was spotting it really quickly, that as the independents arise, he said, watch out for the government attack. They're going to be zoning in on independents, saying... They shout a lot, they may cut their videos, but they're not delivering at all. They're not giving you anything. So the centre, after having dealt with, you know, some of its issues in this campaign, that there's going to be sort of recalibration and they're going to be going after the independents, because the concern obviously would be is if this momentum continues, they will have a huge impact in the general election.
Won't just be the government parties going after independents either, will it? It'll be Sinn Féin.
All parties, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting to watch. So who are the big winners and the big losers then, would you say? Stage.
The new party, Independent Ireland, had a good run during these local and European elections. They got a lot of council seats. They were in close contention for a Dublin seat in the European elections with Niall Boylan, and they're in contention for a seat in Midlands North West with Ciarán Mullooly. So I'm sure they're happy.
Social Democrats, even though their European campaign was pretty flaccid, at a council level, they have done well. They were sort of, I think it was 18, and now they're in the 30s. So I think from that point of view, Holly Cairns will be happy. Maybe they might have expected to get an awful lot more, but nonetheless, I think they can sit back and say, you know, job well done.
And faces who didn't manage to get European seats, that you think we might see them in the general?
Well, Niall Boylan would have to be one. It's interesting, the person who beat him is Éanna Reardon. He's from Dublin Bay North, and that might be the very constituency which Niall Boylan would go for.
Because, of course, we're now into all this speculation about by-elections and then how that affects the timing of the general election. We're all going to be sick of this question of the timing of the general election, aren't we?
I think, the election isn't... The votes haven't yet been counted. We've moved on from one election to another election, and that's where we're going to be until it happens. We're in election mode, whatever way you look at it. So, I mean, there are two theories, really. One is that you hold the by-elections in September and hold out till March for the general election. The other is that you just hold the general election in September, October altogether. So I think one way or the other we'll be voting in the autumn. We'll be back counting in the autumn, maybe not for 5 days, but it seems to be that that is the school of thought really at the moment. And it's a big political decision, gamble. Everyone has a view and a theory on it. But I think maybe the one thing that you're hearing consistently, if anything, is that they should not be going to the polls in the winter, in the new year, in February. Don't leave it that long.
Now, and again, apart from, you know, the government coalition leaders keep saying, no, we're going to go the full distance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're getting advice, as you say, from veterans like Bertie Ahern and Willie O'Dea saying, no, not that time of year. Don't be dragging us around the polls in February or March. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I heard a rustle. There was a rustle. The Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting happened last night at Leinster House, an awful lot of backslapping, which people telling everyone that they were great, even though, as Tommy noted, the centre has lost a little bit more support as it has done over successive elections. But what I heard was that Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader, and Taoiseach, and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, and towards the end of the meeting was suggesting to his Parliamentary Party team that they should all be working through the summer, as the maximum the government would last would be 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
And everyone picked up on that word, maximum, because someone who had been sort of unequivocating insofar as to say, oh, we're definitely going to March, suddenly he was saying maximum.
And also one of the most strident people in government who wanted to hold out was the finance minister, Michael McGrath. And now there's a possibility being talked about more and more now that, you know, he will go for the commissionership because...
Well, I could only get a smile out of Charlie McConnell this morning when I asked him, did he concede at this stage that it was Michael McGrath's rather than his? He didn't rule himself out, though, for consideration.
Well, you think the odds are going up for Michael McGrath now, given that, you know, if it was a bad day for Fianna Fáil, maybe Micheál Martin would have gone for the commissionership, but he'd like to stick around now, you'd have to expect... to see would he have another tilt in government. And the other thing is Michael McGrath's brother getting such a massive
two and a bit
quotas.
So they'd be feeling very confident about their by-election.
Yeah, exactly.
36% of the first preference vote.
That's vote management for you. It was also, I thought Pat Rabbit made an interesting point over the weekend as well. Because again, you know,
he was talking about fruitcakes.
No, not the fruitcakes, actually. But, you know, the final months of a government, you run out of steam. Civil servants are less inclined to rush things through for you because they sense it. And particularly if, you know, this is going to be an election, whether it's straight after the budget or in the early months of next year when the budgetary changes are kicking in people's pay packets, it's going to be all about the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think...
So they won't be doing much else, you know, in November and December other than, you know, making the campaign last longer than it needs to.
Yeah, it's basically all about the budget and also if they can get, you know, have a better story to tell on housing. And that's pretty much it between now and the general election. And also, like, you can see it in Fine Gael now that they'll be honing in on places where they can, you know, get seats, win seats, retain seats. All that sort of micro electoral management stuff is going on, even though it doesn't get an awful lot of attention.
And they're going into the general with a disadvantage on a term that everybody kept saying is so important in the locals' incumbency.
Yeah, but, you know, there was a candidate in Pascal Dunhu's constituency,
Ray McAdam.
I mean, his name was mentioned nearly more than the Taoiseach all throughout the course of the weekend.
My poll topper.
He almost became a household name overnight, even though I failed to remember his first name there. But, you know, you can see that now that they're already kind of shaping potential candidates in places where there, you know, is questions over whether there will be an incumbent running or not. So they're getting their house in order in that sense.
There's one question we have to talk about as the counting still continues, and that is, you know, the nature of the long counts, the length of the ballot paper, the number of people who found, you know, so you're dealing with something as long as a roll of wallpaper nearly, that's pretty hard to deal with. And also questions about, with the number of candidates, the nature of the debates when it ends up being, you know, a huge number of people on a stage and very little time actually for anyone to elaborate on anything. And it's not just us in that regard. There may not be any presidential debates in the States. We've yet to see what will happen there. And the first couple of debates in the UK gathered a similar criticism to some of the debates here, and then a different format on Sky last night with Beth Rigby, the question and answer with an audience. So these are all, like, as elections and voters are changing, these are all questions that maybe need considering too.
I think that it's clear that we probably can do a faster count in Ireland South, Midlands North West, whether it's a bigger venue, more counters, something. I think you can still have the same process, the engagement that you mentioned, Tommy, with Luke Flanagan, but it doesn't have to take this long. Because if Ireland is losing out for 5 years because we've got a count that goes on for 5 days, I think we need to change things. On the question of the number of candidates, I wouldn't be sort of really in favour and clamping down and making it only that the big boys and girls or the rich boys and girls can contest these things. I think it's, but let's have a conversation about it. But in the context of the debate, I think, and media outings, I think that's something that really should have a review. If it is a case, we're going to have more people contesting. How can you ensure your public service remit that you're giving everyone a fair shake? And however those decisions are made, I think it should be public. You should be able to go onto the RTÉ website and find out.
I think the fact that there were 27 candidates in Midlands Northwest, and people were saying, God, is this ballot paper only going to get longer and longer, you know, as the years go on. But anyone looking at it, I think, now might say, I'm not running for that constituency unless you have a big party machine behind you, unless you are some sort of celebrity, someone with great name recognition, because it's so intractable as a candidate for anyone to go around the country, travel the length and breadth of the country, so many diverse range of constituents. You've commuter belt people, you've people out in the islands of the Western Seaboard. And also there's the cost involved in it. And unless you are getting onto the RTÉ debate or you have great name recognition already, the voters aren't going to get to know you. Like, there's only so many GA fixtures, horse racing, marts you can go to. So people might be looking at that and saying, actually, that's a very, very big uphill task to run in that constituency.
We've been talking about ourselves for the duration of this podcast. Let's wrap it up, because this, I mean, on a European scale, not quite the far-right breakthrough that had been predicted. The centre did hold, but it shrank. Would that be a fair assessment? On the other hand, look at France and Germany and big changes there.
Yeah, you've seen big changes there, and you have seen an increase in the more right-wing candidates, and they will have an impact on the new parliament. They're meeting today in Brussels, I think, the leaders of those right-wing groupings to try and figure out how they'll play the coming weeks when key decisions are made. It has probably strengthened Ursula von der Leyen's hand in terms of seeking that second term as commissioner, but it means she will have to lean more to that right-wing agenda, which will be met with a lot of criticism from the likes of the Greens and the left-wing groups.
And just in terms of, you asked who the winners and the losers were, Ursula von der Leyen was a big winner here. She has the, you know, the three groups, the EPP, SND and the Renew group. She has more than 400 votes within that group, and she needs 361 in the European Parliament. Now, granted, some will defect, as the Fianna Fáil members in Renew said they wouldn't vote for her, but she put it herself, the centre has held. But, you know, the more right-wing or extreme right-wing Eurosceptics are making serious inroads. And I think one thing that will be key to look out for in this European Parliament is what sway the Greens have. They are now seeking to have some sort of, you know, balance, to do some sort of deal with Ursula von der Leyen. She can play them off if she wants against the more harder right. But I think in that sense, the fact that Ireland doesn't have any Green representatives in Europe at a time when those Green representatives will have quite a say in the European Parliament is something that they must be really regretting in that party now.
Yeah, just when it comes to von der Leyen, just one thing is to watch out for. EU leaders are having an informal meeting in Brussels on Monday. So the jockeying will really take off then.
And if anyone is feeling, you know, campaign withdrawal symptoms or whatever, just paying some attention to the French elections, the parliamentary
Fantastic.
Elections that Macron has called. And it has really thrown the fox in amongst the pigeons. He was betting it would cause chaos in the far right. So far, they seem to be obliging. And it looks like that one will run and won, and we'll see whether he wins his gamble.
It's wild. I mean, it's great on social media. There's just so much there. It's fascinating.
In the run-up to the Olympics, of all things, as well. I mean,
and that's before the
strikes. Such a political
strikes.
Gamble. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we leave it there for today. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.